Good afternoon and welcome to the, excuse me, Chelan County Board of Directors. All five commissioners are present, so therefore we have a quorum, which is always a good thing. October 31st, 2018, starting with a study session at 11. And regarding cell phones, please put them in a silent position or something that won't disturb the meeting. That would be appreciative. And we encourage you to address the commission. If you do so, give us your name, please, by stepping up to the microphone, your address, and we'll give you a reasonable time to speak with us, and we'll go from there. So with that being said, Kathy Melton, Pledge of Allegiance and our safety minute.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Kathy Melton, Customer Service Program Analyst. And October is Protect Your Hearing Month. So I'm here to talk to you about that. Our ears are extremely precious to us. Our hearing's precious. So we want to make sure to take those measures now so we don't end up paying the consequences later. So our hearing loss is actually measured through the little hair follicles inside of our ears. And those are the sensory cells that convert sounds to energy pulses that go to our brain. Once those are damaged, there is no undoing that damage. So harmful sounds, kind of a good rule of thumb. If you're around noise and that background noise makes it difficult to hear the person that is about an arm's length away from you, it's too noisy. You need to have some hearing protection in. Also, unfortunately, after the fact, if you leave that area or that event and you have ringing in your ears or it's painful at the time, you've been exposed to some sounds that are too intense. So this is also the time of year that most people are going to be outside. We're going to be doing some extra fall cleaning, getting ready for winter. So we may be running some of those chainsaws, lawnmowers, air compressors, things like that. So to give you an example of how some of those register, anything that's over 85 decibels, that is considered dangerous noise exposure. So your hair dryer runs at about 90 decibels. That gives you an idea of how that equates.
Not my hair dryer.
Mine.
I'll find another example for you, I promise. Your alarm clock. How about that one?
There we go.
That's at 80 decibels.
Wow.
Let's see. Concerts, car racing, sporting events. That comes at 110 decibels.
Oh, yeah.
I will say, good rule of thumb, if you're sitting next to my husband at a sporting event, put the earplugs in. He's easily going to surpass that. So it's just a good rule of thumb. Gunshots, fireworks, anything like that, make sure you have hearing protection in. It's just not worth it. Also, if you have one of those MP3 or the kids run around with their iPods and cell phones and everything and their earbuds plugged in, they need to be extraordinarily careful with that. That constant exposure to noise can have some damaging effect. My rule at my house, if I can hear what you're listening to and I don't have your earbuds in, turn it down. That's not okay. So with that, just make sure you put some foam earplugs in or any other items that you can find like that, as long as it is something that was created for hearing protection. I've seen some creative things put in the ears meant to protect your hearing. It's not going to work, and it's just not worth it. It's unsanitary. So, any questions?
No? Just one. Now, it's been said that over a lifetime of marriage that you go tone deaf to certain tones.
That is selective hearing loss.
Oh, okay.
Yes. My husband also suffers from that as well.
Commissioner, I actually think that's diagnosed as domestic deafness.
Okay. No comment.
Smart girl.
Thank you.
Very good, Kathy. Appreciate it very much. approval of the agenda. And it's my understanding that in terms of presentation, we would like all of the items that are on the agenda. Is that correct?
Yes.
Correct. Commissioners, any other alterations to the agenda? Hearing none, we'll move on. Mr. Wright, General Manager.
So I want to invite Justin Erickson to come on up. So you'll recall that Jeff Smith retired from the district earlier this summer. And we spent a fair amount of time looking for someone who could come in and try to fill those big shoes that Jeff had filled for us for so many years. And we're pleased to find someone with a background. We thought it would be difficult to find someone with a background in all the areas that report to district services, and hadn't even thought of the idea of looking for a city manager. And a city manager appeared on our screen, and we realized that, wow, that's pretty good training for this job. So we're pleased to welcome Justin to the district, and would like to take a moment for him to be able to introduce himself to you.
Well, good afternoon, commissioners. It's a pleasure to be here. It's an honor to be a part of this premier organization, and this is an entity with an indelible legacy, and I'm just excited to be a part of that and a part of that going forward. I'm looking forward to working with the board, district staff, and this wonderful community at large to meet the opportunities and challenges before us, and to continue the enduring tradition of stewardship that was put in place more than 80 years ago. A little bit about me personally. Although I relocated here from Oklahoma, I am a Washington native. I went to conducted undergraduate and graduate studies at Central Washington University, and I've been to Chelan County numerous times, so this does feel a bit like a homecoming in part. So it's good to be back. My professional background, as Manager Wright indicated, is most recently in city management, also a background in city planning and community development. And I was most recently city manager in a community just east of Oklahoma City called Shawnee, which has a population about the same as the city of Wenatchee. City managers handle a multitude of issues, from public safety and engineering to public works and internal affairs. And so I'm excited to use that skill set in a little bit different capacity here with the district. On a personal note, my wife, Katie, is a Montana native, and she's relocated here with me along with my two daughters. They're enjoying getting settled in the area. We had no snow the last couple of years in Oklahoma, so the daughters are especially excited about the first snowfall, and they're also very excited to be closer to grandparents. So as I conclude, I'd also like to say a special thank you to Felicity Saberhagen for her dedicated work as interim managing director of district services. She's just been provided me just a wealth of knowledge and has been great in my transition, as have all of the staff here. And so I appreciate your time this afternoon. I look forward to working with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you. And welcome aboard. Thank you.
I might just say we've told Justin that we don't feel like the house is on fire here someplace and there's a big problem that he has to solve right away and later today. In fact, as we describe business unit five-year business plans, Felicity will be presenting on behalf of district services, because a lot of that work was done when she was leading the group. And we're allowing Justin an opportunity to be able to grow into this job. So you'll be seeing more of him through time, but we're also going to make sure that we don't ask too much of him right away.
Any other comments, questions? Thank you. Apprenticeship program.
And we'd like to take a moment to introduce Dave Parkle and Brian Lau that be coming up to talk about the district's apprenticeship program and just give you some background on what it is that we do here. This is a program that we have grown in the last few years as well, so we think it's an important element of the district's long-term success.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Dave Parkhill, Safety Training Program Administrator and Training Director of the district's apprenticeship program. And we are here today to talk about six decades of investing in our employees. We're here today to talk about our apprenticeship program, the changes that have happened over the years, how it's working, understanding the value for both our employees and our customer owners, and then finally to celebrate 62 years of success. And we're here today just for information only. No action will be requested. So on October 18th, 1956, the district began its apprenticeship program, and 334 district employees have completed apprenticeships in a variety of different crafts. Now, currently, we have 8 different programs. We have linemen, generation mechanics, generation wiremen, and power systems wiremen, operators, water technicians, and metermen. We're currently using 4 programs right now, but we do have a total of 8 affiliated with the state of Washington. From 2007 to 2018, 51 employees have completed the program in either a mechanic, wireman, lineman, or technician trade, and there was a major revitalization back in 2011. And commissioners, Steve, senior team, thank you so much for your investment in our employees. When I go to the State Apprenticeship and Training Council meetings in Spokane every fall, I get to meet with the board, and I will talk to a lot of them on items that we're going over as a district with our apprentices, and it never fails while they're saying, Chelan PUD has one of the best apprenticeship programs in the state. And to hear that from the council is very, very gratifying. This is a picture of our Joint Apprenticeship Training Committee. It's made up of both bargaining unit and non-bargaining unit employees. We meet every quarter. We review evaluations that the journeymen have filled out for our apprentices in the variety of crafts. We get to find out where they're working. And then we also talk about items that might be on the state apprenticeship report, as well as any changes we might have to make with our standards of apprenticeship. Now, where we are currently, we have 12 generation mechanic apprentices, 2 wireman apprentices, 2 linemen, and then finally a technician apprentice. Now, the requirements are pretty stringent. Each apprentice must have at least 2,000 on-the-job training hours every year. And all of our programs, with the exception of the technician programs, are a 3-year program. Technicians are a 4-year program. And in addition, they also must receive 144 classroom hours at a minimum per year, and a lot of the crafts go a lot over that. For example, our linemen, for example, will spend 2 weeks down at Camp Ryalea in Oregon and spend time with other apprentices down there. And the majority of our instructors are district employees, with a lot of them that went through the program as well. And that's really, really exciting to see. Now, regards to value of our apprentices for our customer owners, first of all, we are getting the cream of the crop employees. For example, we had a generation wireman apprentice trainee position just open up, and there were over 130 applicants for one job.
Wow.
Very incredible. And so we are definitely getting the best. And looking at Department of Labor statistics, 91% of apprentices will stay in their job after completing the program. And had a chance to take a look at our statistics from the last 15 years. And the good news, the district's right there with the Department of Labor. We're at 91%. And our other skilled craft workers that we have are at 76% retention. So both of those statistics are amazing. Another value, we're keeping very highly skilled workers here at the PUD. And our employees also invest in our apprentices. As mentioned, a lot of our instructors are those that went through the program themselves. Great example, one of our newest generation mechanics that just received his journeyman ticket a couple months ago is now an instructor for our generation mechanic class that just started up. I think that's fantastic. It meant that much to them. And then we have 14 instructors currently across the program in all the different crafts. Now, one other value, not apprenticeship, however, the district has invested in students over the last 6 years. And we had 12 students this year alone, customer accounting students, engineering students, and that's fantastic to see as well. So in addition to apprenticeship, we're also investing in students that'll work here for the summer. And we've actually, over the last couple of years, some of their first jobs when they graduated from college were here at the PUD. How exciting does that is to come from working here as a student and your first job is here. So that's great to see. I've brought some employees here today that are either currently involved in the program or were at one time at the program. So, sure.
Hi. Good afternoon. My name is Eric Steele. I'm a technician here at Chulang PUD. I've been at the district about 17 years. Just probably about 4 years ago, I started to become an instructor for, sorry for the wireman, for the generation wireman and transmit, or excuse me, distribution wireman. Just kind of some of my duties. I have to get the daily plans put together. We stay 5 o'clock till 8 o'clock at night, teach the class. And just kind of we kind of reach out over the state. We've had apprentices, we've had wireman apprentices from Okanagan, Grant, Douglas County, Franklin County. So our apprenticeship is widely known across the state, and it's nice to see that. It's nice to see that people are recognizing us for our work, and thank you all for that. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Justin Wilkinson. I'm currently enrolled in the apprenticeship program as a hydro mechanic. We just started our second year of school. I'm also partaking in the veterans side of it, which is amazing. Dave's made it super easy. As far as logging our hours, you know, that a whole process is very simple for us. He helps us out a lot. The VA has now gone electronic, which is great. Like he said earlier, the value of this program is incredible. The instructors are amazing. Like he said, brand new journeyman is already turned around and teaching. There's a few of us in our class that have the same intentions also, because we wouldn't be where we're at without them, so we all look forward to passing it on. One of my instructors in my first year told me that he truly believes from the bottom of his heart that when you're done with this apprenticeship, you'll be able to fix anything. And at first, I was kind of skeptical, but now that we're in it and learning with all the OJT and the classroom stuff, I do truly believe that. And it's an honor to be part of this program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Brian Lau. I am a distribution station superintendent, and I went through the line apprenticeship school in the early 80s. And so if I look back at having gone through the school, and we got out of school, I taught apprenticeship school for 6 or 8 years for a while. And the skills of no matter what craft our apprentices go through, the skills are universally applicable, I feel. As an apprentice, you are encouraged and you want to work hard. You are eager to learn. You want to add value. So whether as an apprentice, as journeyman, or a different role, right? That's really what we want to do. We want to add value every day. We should always have this strong quest for to learn, to make the district a better place, to make ourselves more valuable. And so the skills that we learn, we bring with us for a lifetime. And so I'm very pleased to see that the district is continuing to support the program.
So in summary, what a celebration. 6 decades of investing in our employees. And once again, commissioners, Steve, senior team, thank you so much. We really appreciate each and every one of you for your investment. The customers are seeing that with us having top-notch employees. And our employees are seeing that from the district investing in their skills that they can use to help widen their career path. Any questions? Thank you.
Randy.
It's not a question. It's more of a comment. You highlighted the year 2011 when we revitalized the program, and I remember that like it was yesterday. And we, as you probably, you too remember, we were in, quote, preservation mode at that moment in time. And we'd been through some tough financial moments. But this commission, there's three of us still here, really, really understood, and I think still understand the value of us providing that educational grounding for our employees. It's such a powerful tool that, you know, once you receive that education, nobody's ever going to take it away from you either. It's there forever. And so I'm tickled to get this report, to see that us revitalizing the program has made a difference. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for employees for coming. It's nice to hear from you. And I love the positive attitudes. It just shines through with all of you. But I do have to note something. I was interested. This is 1956?
That's 1960, the graduating class. They were dressed up a little bit.
But I don't see any women, no female. We've come a long way.
Yes, we have.
Not a one. How many female employees do we have today? Both bargaining unit and non-bargaining unit. Or percentage-wise, I'm just curious. 25%? So that's good. We're making progress.
You bet.
Any other comments? Dave, I'd like to just compliment you on your enthusiasm. When leadership has enthusiasm about what they're doing, it becomes contagious to all those people who are involved in doing it. So, again, thanks for that, and you're appreciated.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really good to see you.
Good to see you here today.
It is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Draft the 5-year business plan.
Hey, thank you. This is a moment that we have been preparing for more than 6 months now, and I feel like we're ready to basically begin the 2019 budget planning process. And the way we do that is by talking, first of all, about where we're trying to go over the course of the next 5 years. What we'll be discussing today are key drivers that we have come to understand as we've gone through this planning cycle that comes out of a few key learnings that we've had. We're just going to review mission, vision, values, and objectives. These are not new. We don't make changes in these. These were set by the board in the last strategic planning process. Know that they'll be revisited as part of the next strategic planning process. These were the things that we were working with as we set the 2019 budget proposal in place. We've got some key initiatives that we're working on for the next period, 2019 through 2023. Whenever you walk into a process like this, you have a few things that you know are things that you can't be certain how they're going to turn out. We call them known unknowns, as Donald Rumsfeld did. They are uncertainties that can impact the plan no matter how we go. Certainly, cryptocurrency was one of those last year and had a huge impact on the plan. After having gone through a big picture look at this, we'll come back and look through each of the different operating unit business plans for the next 5 years. I want to take one more second and just say that the process that we've used this year is very similar to one we've used in previous years, but it starts with in basically February, the senior team getting together and thinking through their initial thoughts about key things that we want to take into account in that time frame. Development of the initial plans is completed by roughly the end of June. We add up all the numbers, and that's the first time that we really begin to think about, okay, so does this add up? Can we afford to do this or not? There's a general manager review that takes place at that point, sitting down with each of the business unit, talking about what they are planning to do, providing some feedback on the initial drafts. And then we go through a process with a senior team where each senior team member gets to play. If they were the general manager, what would they do with this big, once you compile everything, what does it look like and how would we take action? And we then do something that might seem like it's out of order, but unfortunately it needs to happen this way. We go through an internal resource review just to say, so we can, each of the business units have thought about what their FTE needs are, but how does it fit when you put everything together and you understand that there are interdependencies between different initiatives? And candidly, we're still a bit in the midst of that process, still with some more work to do, but we think we're beginning to get a handle on it. And we're ready to have this conversation. What are the key learnings from this plan cycle? Well, first one, I think, is very important, that the debt ratio target was achieved in 2018, a year early. So that's one of our key three strategic objectives coming out of the last plan. It tells us that at least from a financial perspective, we're achieving the objectives that we needed to accomplish. A second one is that something that has grown on us over the last couple of years. We've talked about it before, but it is even more striking, I think, in this particular development of the five-year plan, and that's that from an asset management standpoint, we really focused foremost on the hydro assets because that group was in the best position to be able to advance asset management when we first started down this path, and then have been growing it in other parts of the business. I think one of the things that we are concluding is that we really do not have assets in the state that we want them to be in. Whereas we've been after the financial planning goals probably since 2010 in terms of debt reduction, we really have been after the asset management goals only since about 2015. And we're at best midway there in terms of achieving our objectives. So we have a fair amount of work to do. I think in thinking about this from a benchmarking standpoint, the board a couple of times has described that we are in the top five utilities in the country in terms of our financials, at least certainly for public power utilities. But when we think about where we are from a hydro asset standpoint, what's the capability of the system, number of units that are running, and when we look at distribution system reliability and compare ourselves against our peers, we'd say we're probably second quartile someplace. Certainly room for improvement in those areas. And so you see a greater focus in these business plans on how we can move up to hopefully top quartile in both hydro system capability and distribution system reliability. We've tried to place a particular emphasis on safety, operational excellence, quality, and the pace of being able to get things done here, really starting with that safety piece. You've heard a lot about Human Performance Initiative. We've been doing a lot of learning about that. We see this as a year in which we likely will be growing the safety human performance initiatives substantially. Candidly, we're still in the midst of developing that, so I expect you to hear more from us about that over the course of the next couple of months. But we know that that's going to be a significant focus area for us for this year. We'd also say, I told you that in the midst of this process, we go through and say, so how do the numbers all add up? We've got a lot of budgets here, a lot of wants. And the good news is that the information you'll be seeing here today, we believe our key financial policies and long-term financial sustainability goals can be achieved, in fact, would be achieved under this plan, assuming that everything that's forecasted came true. Our bottom line financials are down from strategic planning, just as they have been every year since strategic planning, but actually a little bit better than last year. That's the first time in this planning cycle, this five-year planning cycle, that we've actually had a budget that looked better than the one the year before. I'd also note that this budget proposal for 2019 will not include a rate increase, but the rate metrics are getting a little tighter than they have been in the past. So let's take a moment and just think about the numbers and how they've changed since the last strategic plan, and then we'll also talk about a comparison against last year. Our bottom line is down close to $100 million from the for this five-year period compared against the original strategic plan conclusions from 2015, and more than $200 million when you look out through 2027. That's primarily because of wholesale revenues. So we've talked about this many, many times about the decline in the wholesale market. You can see the numbers at the bottom of the page there in terms of how heavy and light load prices have declined since the time of the adoption of the strategic plan. And as you know, a substantial portion of our revenue comes from that wholesale market. So we have seen a pretty dramatic decline there. Our operating expenses are up. A significant portion of that has to do with the hydro assets. There's some things that you might think of as capital or long-term expenditures that gets classified as operation and maintenance. And our capital expenditures are up. Both of those, I think, are not a surprise. They're a direct result of the strategic plan. We said we need to focus on our assets and making sure we put those in good shape, and so we're seeing increases in expenditures there. The capital expenditures, well, I'll come back to that in a moment. When your revenues are down and your expenses are up, not surprisingly, your liquidity and your debt outstanding numbers go the opposite direction. So our liquidity is down about $50 million from this original strategic plan and $165 million from when you look out through 2027. Our debt outstanding has increased, although we are still better than our 35% debt-to-equity ratio. The original strategic plan assumed that we would continue to drive down our debt to very low levels, and even then we had questions about whether that was the right thing to do or not. So again, we are not in as good a shape as we had thought we would be in the strategic plan. That shouldn't be a surprise given the previous conversations that we've had. When you look at the comparison, though, against last year, we do have an improvement. Our bottom line for that 2019 to 2023 period has improved by more than $50 million. Candidly, a substantial portion of that is due to the Alcoa revenue that, that we've seen, although we actually have had a slight increase, you can see at the bottom of the page, in wholesale revenue prices from last year. That's the first time that we've shown an increase in wholesale prices since we started putting these together back in 2015. Our net wholesale revenues are down despite that, in part because we're beginning to move some of our wholesale sales into the retail market as a result of high density load and cryptocurrency loads. So the service revenues, the local load growth numbers are up. The cost plus long-term contract revenue, that's essentially the Alcoa with a few other minor pieces, dollars that are there. Operating expenses are up a bit. Non-operating expenses offset that some. This is net interest expense continues to go down as we pay down debt. And we're also seeing a little bit higher revenue off of our financial reserves because interest rates have been going up just a bit. Our capital expenditures are up. That's primarily due to facilities. That's the biggest driver there. So we've included in these numbers an assumption that we will begin to invest in both Rock Island, Rocky Reach, as well as the operations and headquarters facilities. Total liquidity is essentially about the same, and our debt outstanding has gone down a little bit, again, primarily because our bottom line net revenues have improved during the period. So you can see there's a modest improvement here from where we were a year ago. So let's talk about the, from a management perspective, the key drivers that we think are influencing the way that this budget and business plan has been put together. First of all, we just think that the direction from the board is very clear to maintain the strong district financials that we have enjoyed and that we want to continue to enjoy to make sure that we're meeting all of our financial metrics. We do, though, as we did, as we forecasted last year, are anticipating that we would move into the borrowing market towards the end of this period, 2022. That's a little bit delayed as a result of the Alcoa money, but only a modest change there. We've worked on setting a goal for ourselves with respect to hydro capability, and this comes out of the work that we were looking at in terms of where are we in terms of how we compare against other utilities in terms of hydro capability. We would really like to be top quartile. We'd like to be among the best in this area. And again, I think we're probably more like second quartile today. Our goal is to try to get to the 89% range. It may take us until the mid-2020s to get there, but we're trying to set some interim goals to across the next five-year period about where we want to go. We need to get some of the units that are not operating, particularly at Rock Island, back into a fully operational state. We want to improve distribution system reliability. Again, we want to shoot for moving towards top quartile in terms of our reliability numbers there. We, as you know, our customer satisfaction scores are top quartile. Our customers are very happy. I think mostly because we're really good at answering the phone. A lot of utilities don't answer the phone, and we actually do. Like, one thing I hope we will never give up here is that if you call here, you actually talk to a live person. We've got some work to do, and we'll describe this more during the course of this presentation in terms of equipment reliability. We've got a lot of load growth, and we're going to need to make some investments for load growth. So we see some substantial work there to get to where we want to be in terms of distribution system operations. Again, we've talked a little bit about focusing on safety, and this will be a year in which we're increasing our activities with respect to the Human Performance Initiative. And we particularly have begun to put some work into how do we move quicker through our decision-making processes without compromising safety or quality. How do we take advantage of technology, resource allocation, and process streamlining in order to be able to move decisions more quickly in order to achieve some of these objectives, particularly with respect to hydro system capability and distribution system reliability? we see some really significant technology changes coming, and they change the way that we will need to do our work around here. We've talked before about the fact that we're going to become a more data-driven organization. The things that are lined up to be done in the next few years, and you can see them in this five-year budget cycle, make it clear that we will have a different skill set that's necessary here in the district in order to be successful. So we have a new customer information system we've been working on for a while. We expect it to go live next year. And following that is the plan to implement advanced metering infrastructure, which between those two, we will have a lot more data available to us in order to be able to help us make decisions. The board, of course, has already committed to an investment in the Hydropower Research Institute, in which we will be enhancing sensor data and then collecting all that data and interpreting it. It's the interpretation part that really creates the value, and you've got to be able to have the skill sets in order to be able to do that. We have certainly been concerned about moving to independent hydro operations from the central operations for Mid-Sea that's operated since basically the Columbia River Treaty went into effect. But as we've started to go down this path, we're also recognizing the opportunities that it creates for us, because we'll be putting in place new systems that's going to create a lot more visibility for our people about how operations are actually happening and what we may be able to do to be able to enhance operations. And around us, there are things going on that we're not going to be able to control. The energy imbalance market that's run out of the California Independent System Operator, more and more utilities are joining. It's creating a smaller and smaller market for us to be able to get into. And the big issue that's pending is whether they are going to move to a day-ahead energy imbalance market from just the hour-ahead energy imbalance market. Less than 5% of the transactions in the marketplace participate in an hour-ahead market, probably 40% or more in the day-ahead market. If that happens, it's going to have significant implications for us. The utilities who have gone through this transition have spent anywhere from 1 year to 2.5 implementing the systems to put in place an energy imbalance market. So there is a substantial workload associated with that. And again, a lot more data that becomes available to you once you've got those systems in place. We have assumed that our financials are good enough to support the public power benefit program being maintained for the next year, essentially at the same level that it has been for the last couple of years. And I would just note that as we were putting this together, we were recognizing that we're on the cusp of initiating a new strategic planning effort, and that will cover the years 2020 to 2024. That's going to create the opportunity to address some of the big picture issues that we know are coming towards us. And so we just have also needed to plan for the fact that, recall that the last time around, it took a significant amount of staff time and board time to go through that strategic planning effort. And we see that beginning in the first quarter of 2019. I'm not going to read these because they are the same as what we've had before and have had up on the wall for a while. We used our vision and mission statements to guide our activities. And we used our values, the safety, trustworthiness, stewardship, and operational excellence, and tried to continually check back against that. I will say that while it's not a formal part of our vision, mission, or values, we certainly used the best for the most for the longest, as it's up there on the wall as a constant check-in for are we making the right choices with respect to budget and other resources. Quick review on our strategic plan goals. We have achieved our debt reduction efforts, got the debt ratio target achieved a year early. I've already described where we are with respect to reinvesting in core assets, that we think we've made some progress, but we have a long way to go still in terms of getting those assets into the place where we want them to be. And the public power benefit program is providing value, we think, and achieving the goal of enhancing the quality of life in our county. Our balanced scorecard, also we are not proposing any changes to this. I think this is something that will be reviewed as we move forward with strategic planning. But it starts with the flip of the way the balanced scorecard was originally developed back at Harvard when it was first put together by putting the customer first rather than financials first, committing the highest level of customer owner satisfaction, and recognizing that we have substantial responsibilities to non-customers, particularly through our non-resource operations, making sure that we have financial stability, that from an internal perspective, that we're focused on continuous improvement in efficient, effective, compliant, and risk-assessed operations while investing in creating long-term value, and that in order to do that, we need a workforce that has strong capabilities and is focused on our values. So what are some of the specific initiatives? And I'm calling out some of the ones that I think are the most important and district-wide initiatives. You'll be hearing more about these as we go through individual business unit presentations. But given that focus on trying to get our hydro system capability up to close to 90%, getting the Rocky Reach large unit repairs accomplished, we made some really good progress there in terms of getting the windings complete, but we still have the turbine shafts and three of the units that need to be repaired. And we have a lot of work to do on Powerhouse 1 refurbishment. In fact, we're constantly struggling with the schedules there, and we'll be coming back to the board with a presentation here in the not-too-distant future about all the things that we have going on at Powerhouse 1. Customer information system and advanced two-way metering will be big focuses in 2019 in particular. As we get that customer information system in place in 2019 and we move to AMI, there's a whole bunch of pieces that come with AMI in order to achieve the business case. So outage management system has to be developed. We want to move forward with what's called a voltage optimization program, which actually allows you to reduce your investments in your distribution system. So we've got some big pieces here that follow on, and it won't just be putting AMI in place. It's actually then making sure that you take advantage of all of that new data that becomes available to you. Distribution system reliability, we are concerned that we may be underinvesting with respect to our equipment reliability. We talked some about this summer with the problem that we had with cables, that we've got a number of cables that are aging on our system that are creating, in terms of equipment reliability, the largest number of outages. And so we're proposing to increase the budgets for equipment system reliability. And we are seeing in our future the potential for 14 new substations. We have 34 today, so that's a pretty substantial increase in the number of substations as we see load growth occurring on the system. We've got to work through a new hourly coordination plan. This is the independent system operations, we've got a little bit of a delay. We've come to an agreement with Grant to allow an additional six-month extension, but we still want to try to have that in place well in advance of the Christmas season next year, so we don't have employees putting in place a new system over the Christmas holidays. Talked some already about the fact that we're going to need to develop our employees to achieve the safety goals, operational excellence, and move forward with more data-driven processes and decision-making. One of the things that we worked on this year is we had more work than we could do this year, especially with the cryptocurrency challenges that we had. So we had to make prioritization calls during the course of the year, and that created some tension within the organization. We had been working on prioritization. Recall last year we created we called P1, P2, and Stretch, which were the different ways of categorizing the different projects in terms of their level of importance, and we use that. The things that were stretched, many of them are not going to happen this year because we've had to make prioritization choices. In the capital projects for this year, we've actually ranked them from top to bottom. So from one to, I believe it's around 180 projects, so that there would be clearer direction when there are conflicts within the organization. And the conflicts tend to be people all running to procurement services or legal needing to get their project through, that there'll be clear direction about what the priorities are. You know that we're off on this this mission to try to come up with alternative contracting mechanisms, and that's a whole new approach for us. We're applying it now much more broadly, looking at it not just in terms of facilities, but you have a resolution later for you today on Rock Island Powerhouse 2. To move forward with the process using alternative contracting mechanisms there. We're looking at it in terms of if we're actually going to go forward with as many as 14 substations, can we group those together in a way that will allow us to take advantage of alternative contracting mechanisms? So we see much more activity in that arena. We also have spent probably a year and a half now working with our vendors on creating longer-term warranties for hydropower projects to achieve best for the most for the longest, and we think we're making progress there, but that requires new approaches as well, because we've been learning in the discussions with those parties that, you know, if it's going to be a longer-term warranty, then they want the opportunity to make sure that they have more input at the beginning as to exactly what's going into those projects. We're assuming that we'll stay on track for the fiber expansion program to the 85 to 90% of homes passed. We have a huge uncertainty around the fact that we will have a new cryptocurrency rate going into effect, and we have to implement that rate and then assess how it's actually working. We expect to continue to be active in terms of market developments that have, impact the value of Northwest Hydro. One of the most significant of those is going to be the question about energy imbalance markets and the development of the California Independent System Operator. I think we reported to you that the California legislature did not approve the regionalization bill that was pending before them. And so a significant question is just how far is the Northwest going to go in choosing to be a part of a California independent system operator in which the leaders are selected by the California governor and the California legislature.
So, Steve, that's in terms of governance.
Yes.
They regionalize in terms of, I thought that was kind of a done deal.
It was up and down in the legislature. There were times, I think we probably reported to you, that there was some optimism that that bill was going to pass, and it got close, but it didn't make it.
Really?
And of course, an important element for us is that we're planning to implement the long-term planning strategies for facilities. We're off and running already at Rock Island and Rocky Reach, and the board has an important decision to make in 2019 about facilities for the service center and headquarters. We have already mentioned we're looking to try to streamline our procurement processes and seek efficiency through information technology initiatives. This gets to some of the struggles that we hit this year with prioritization. Are there ways that we can accomplish more of our goals? We will need to further investigate a second source for water. So we had thought we had one, and the wells came up dry down at Rock Island. So we've got a significant question in front of us about trying to create that redundancy and expansion of water supply for the community that right now is, we thought we'd be in the point where we'd actually be moving forward with drilling, and we're not. So we're going to have to go find another spot to make that work. I think you're pretty familiar with the fact that we're moving forward with the Peshashan water quality improvement. That's a big project for 2019. What we don't have resolved is a strategy for Dryden. So we have non-point source issues. Non-point source policy is not clear. Working with the Department of Ecology on that is one of the key issues for this coming year. We have rate strategies that we want to address for both addressing the need for trying to make sure that we don't have large rate increases in the future, large double-digit rate increases. And we also have emerging cost recovery issues associated with second homes, distributed generation, electric vehicles that we think need to be addressed. So we see 2019 as being a key year to address those rates issues. Intend to continue with our goal of exceeding the energy efficiency requirements mandated under Initiative 937. Keep working on asset management and growing that throughout the organization. And added one that I think is important, we're getting a lot of, doing a lot with our public power colleagues through APPA, through Large Public Power Council, but also through the Public Generating Pool, Northwest Public Power Association. And I'm just going to highlight one example here. Recently, we're working with Energy Northwest as we have come to realize that we have huge amounts of work to do at the hydro facilities. We've been trying to figure out, how do you get all this work done? And so at Energy Northwest, every 2 years, they have to go through a refueling outage. And the nuclear industry as a whole has become much better at refueling outages. It used to take them anywhere from 3 to 6 months to do a refueling outages. For the most part, those are accomplished in 60 days now. So we asked Energy Northwest to come and visit with us and just share. So how do you do that? How do you squeeze a schedule down like that? And particularly with the quality that's required in the nuclear industry, quality and safety. And they've been very helpful to us. And we're going to do some more work with them to see if we can't learn some more from them. So there are opportunities here to be able to work with our colleagues in the public power industry to try to improve our operations as well. In terms of paying down debt, our goal is to maintain that debt ratio of less than 35%. We're on a path to do that with what we're looking at for 2019, 2023, although it's getting closer, I will tell you, than it has been in the past. And the public power benefit program, we continue the fiber system expansion, the park passes. We've talked recently about the Rocky Reach Discovery Center improvements, which is a project we have included in the in the budgets in this period, although I will tell you it is one of the lower priorities relative to, because we were trying to get to what things address hydro system capability and distribution system reliability. Those came up closer to the top of the list. Again, we're planning to continue the public power benefit program. What are the things that we worry about? What keeps us up at night? So biggest and foremost is the top two there. Just how much load growth are we going to have at the retail level, particularly cryptocurrency? We're going to, we hope, finish off this rate and put it into effect, and then we're going to see how many people take the rate and how much load we end up with. And that will have a huge impact on us. And so big unknown and potentially a significant workload. If lots of people are taking the rate, then that translates also into a need most likely for infrastructure investment. And that will require a substantial amount of resource, both financial as well as people. There continue to be a lot of changes in the electric market. We're trying to track the fundamentals and pricing there. We are likely going to, as part of the question about cryptocurrency, raise additional issue is whether we are better off with more retail load or whether we're better off trying to keep the amount of resource that we have sold into the wholesale market. A lot of that comes down to what do you believe the future of the wholesale market is going to be. We could parade up a whole bunch of experts here who would give you both sides of the coin and tell you the price is going to go up or the price is going to go down. Ultimately, we're going to need to make a judgment about the best use of the assets that we have. We expect, and what we have found as we've gotten more into asset management, that the condition of our assets are not as good as we would like, and we will uncover more of those over the course of the next couple of years. It's hard to tell just how much. We will implement independent dam operations. Can't say for certain what all of the implications of that are at this point, and that can impact a variety of things, including how the reservoirs go up and down in our neighborhood, as well as the value of the wholesale marketing sales that we make. We've seen a whole bunch of changes in regulatory and licensing requirements. They come in different directions. There have been a lot of changes at the federal level, which have tended to reduce licensing requirements in the last couple of years. We've seen some at the state level that are increasing those requirements. We have found it difficult to forecast loads, to be honest. We've seen more load growth the last couple of years here. This is non-cryptocurrency load growth. We've had to modify our load growth forecast for that, and those load growth forecasts drive all of our infrastructure investment decisions. The Columbia River Treaty, certainly there has been some movement there in the last year, some hope that we'll see an outcome. Potentially that will be a significant benefit to the district. But there are scenarios where it actually turns out to be a cost. So we can't say for certain what the future of that will be. I've already talked about the fact that we need to make an important decision with respect to the operations service center and headquarters. We so far find ourselves, we think, able to compete for and retain top talent, but the market continues to move. And you're familiar with the fact that the wages market is moving generally across the country in all industries. That will certainly affect the electric utility industry. We have assessed a fair amount on climate change impacts. We feel pretty good that we think we understand the risk there, but we are talking about a forecast for the weather and a long-term forecast for the weather. So we don't think that we can say with confidence that we know for certain what will happen. We've seen a fairly big increase in terms of the expectations of our stakeholders relative to the amount of engagement that they want on a variety of issues. And we have to budget for that because it takes time and money in order to be able to address all of those issues. And so increases in those expectations have an impact on us. And we have worked to try to understand the impact of wildfires and storms. You've seen that most recently with the transmission discussion that we've had around the Chelan area. More of those kinds of things mean that we would have to address, put more work into the risk management efforts. So those are the big ones on our screen. Of course, there's 100 more beyond that of things that are of concern. In terms of our financial policies, under this plan, we hit all of our targets for the 4 years, but for a couple of them, We're assuming that we will be borrowing by the end of the period, by 2022, in order to be able to maintain liquidity and days cash on hand. So let's just review for a second the money piece, because everything is driven by money. We'd like to think it's not, but it is. And so you've got to be really clear about how much money you have and what you can do. This is the liquidity forecast at the time the strategic plan was adopted. You've seen it many, many times over the years. The blue line was our expected value forecast. The brown line was the what if things go bad forecast. The dotted lines, by the end of strategic planning, we said there's a reasonable chance by this period we will begin to get back into the borrowing market. And so if we were borrowing, then you see the liquidity that we would have. And you can see that we were well positioned. We exceeded the minimum liquidity target with really hardly breaking a sweat. And we had a, some risk, though, that, that things would go bad, that we'd have particularly low prices in the market, and that that would create, candidly, a crisis at that point if we were to experience that. So let's now compare that against how things have actually gone. Very busy graph, right? But I think it's hopefully going to be reasonably clear. The solid lines now reflect the deepest, darkest solid lines reflect the actuals up until 2018, and then beyond that point, our forecasts. The expected value, the blue area, you can see that we've exceeded expectations compared against the strategic plan. So we've actually are in better shape than the strategic plan anticipated at this point. But part of that was because we had our hedging program in place that was protecting us against the lower prices. So now we've had a few years, and the five-year hedges that we had in place are beginning to roll off. And so you see a decline in terms of our liquidity beginning to occur over the course of this next year. And that continues to decline, whereby in that 2021 time frame, we're back down to about the same level as our original forecast. And then from there, things are a little bit worse off. Up to the point where, by 2022 time frame, we anticipate that we will need to have borrowing in order to maintain our liquidity target. Yep.
That forecast for revenue going forward, because we've got contracts rolling off, does it assume that the power that's not under contract will be sold at any value?
At the current market price.
At the current market price.
Yeah. I would say current market price, assuming that we'd be able to achieve the premium that we've achieved over the last couple of years, which is a little bit above the current market price.
Okay.
And even on this forecast, it goes to the end of the current contracts, the first one. So you don't even see kind of what it looks like beyond that, because 2028 is the end of the first contract.
Of the big one, but not, we've got some five-year ones out there too.
Yeah, so I was speaking to the five-year ones, and right. Kelly was speaking to the longer-term right. ones. So you can see the yellow area means that we're in poorer shape than the strategic plan assumed, and so you see that starting to occur in that 2021 to 2022 timeframe. From a low price scenario, of course, we've now got actuals. So we're 4 years in. We haven't had those terrible low prices. And so we start from a much higher point. And from that much higher point, the period of, quote, crisis, if we were experiencing the low forecast, doesn't occur until later, but does show up just a year or two earlier than our expected value forecast. And just means that we'd be struggling a lot more in that time frame. Recall that the board has adopted a philosophy with respect to borrowing that says that we would use borrowing to some extent in order to be able to manage rates, and so we would see a combination of borrowing and rates actions in terms of addressing that challenge if we were to experience it. How about some of the specific business lines? So in the fiber business line, we anticipate that we're in good shape to be able to meet all of our financial metrics over the course of the next few years. We do anticipate that we'll need some rate increases, but they're pretty modest out there. In water and wastewater, We've already made some decisions, as well as with fiber. You may recall I made some decisions about funding support from shared capital. We have not made that decision with respect to direct capital for water and wastewater. So this is one of the issues that we think we're going to need to address in strategic planning. Is in the last strategic plan, we did include a provision that transferred some dollars from the electric side over to the water and wastewater side. We don't make a decision here with respect to that because we view that as a board decision that we'll make as part of the strategic planning process. This next slide has to do with how we internally account for hydro projects, and I'm going to turn this one over to Kelly.
So you'll notice kind of the same theme from the water and wastewater for Rock Island and Rocky Reach capital expenditures. We are forecasted to exceed the funding that we achieve through our long-term contract charges, which are our capital recovery charge and debt reduction charge. So that's the DRC and CRC. And these charges are funds that come in that are available to pay as we go for capital or for accelerated debt payments. And to date, we've been using these funds to pay for capital and avoid the need for new debt at the hydro projects. But we are projecting in this time period that we'll fully utilize those funds sometime probably during 2019, depending on the pace of capital expenditures. And from that point forward, those charges will only partially cover the capital plans for Rocky Reach and Rock Island. So that means that we will also be in the mode of new internal loans or new external debt, kind of depending on the overall picture. But both of those actions require board approval. So we would be back to the board, you know, likely 2019, when the timing is more known of when we would need additional funding for Rocky Reach and Rock Island. And at this point, we're anticipating that initially it would be an internal loan, but those plans can change based on how our assumptions actually turn out. But the other item to note out of that, too, is that the new loans, whether internal or external debt, they are included in the cost of power. So our power purchasers will share in the cost of that additional debt.
Thanks, Kelly. So let's talk a little bit about retail electric rates for a moment. Recall that we adopted this these metrics, just a little more than a year ago. We began to look at how are we doing on our retail rates. And I'm not going to go through each one of these, but just to say that there's more yellow showing up on this page than there has been in the past. We're getting closer to the kinds of things that we felt should be taken into account. The reason I don't want to go through the individual metrics is I don't think there's any one individual metric that tells you, yes, you need to do something about your retail rates. There's a fair amount of judgment that goes into this. I would just note that the thing that I kind of look at most closely is the retail electric gap, the difference between what our customers are paying and what the cost of the service is against how much of a market-based margin we're creating. So how much money are we creating out of the wholesale market? I need to caution you to say there are a variety of ways of calculating these metrics too. So we're going to show you one way of calculating these metrics. But the way that we've been putting this together for the last couple of years, by about 2021, that retail electric gap is more than $27 million, and the market margin that we're creating is about $25 million. So actually, the subsidy that we're putting into our retail rates is greater than the margin that we're creating at the wholesale level. That for me, has always been the point that you go, that starts to get troublesome. And need to be thinking about whether we want to stay on that path or not. Having said that, we have had a really long string of good years here. And so cumulatively, we showed you this graph last year. Think the rate of inflation over those years had been about 39%. It's up to about 42% now, while at the same time, our rates have only gone up about 8%. So we're certainly beating inflation by a large margin here. With that, what I'm planning to do is turn it over to the individual business units. And then we'll come back and take questions from you at that point. Or maybe I should just ask, are there any questions at this point? No? Okay.
Good afternoon. Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. And our business plan is full over the next 5 years. We've got a lot of work ahead of us. As usual, generation and transmission, we're focused on generating and transmitting clean, renewable hydroelectricity with a high degree of reliability. We'll accomplish this by being among the best at complying with reliability standards, safely completing the modernization projects at the hydros, leveraging data analytics, and implementing a robust asset management strategy. The way we make a difference in generation and transmission for the districts and our customers is by being good stewards of the assets entrusted to us at the hydro projects. Those projects in the transmission system generate a lot of revenue for the district to do the things we do here, offering the services we can provide to our customers. One of the things we get to do in generation and transmission, because we have a number of resources involved in operating and maintaining the hydros, is we get to evaluate a lot of the things that we bring to the district first, and you'll be hearing about some of those as I go here. The major focus and highest priority is continuing on the track of our modernization and rehabilitation efforts at the hydros. As Steve pointed out, we plan to move from a 78% capability where we're at now to a 89% in 2024, and the interim goal that Steve mentioned that we're shooting for is an 86% capability by 2021. So you'll see some significant improvement if we stay on track, and then you'll see that level out. We would expect, historically, we've been up above 90% capability with our asset management strategies. Reviewing the sustainable place to be is around the 89% capability. The reason it's less than 90% is we've recognized the value of making sure we do our maintenance and staying on top of our condition assessments so that we always know the condition our units are in. So that's why we're going to be a little bit below the 90%, as we can stay on top of those. We'll have a plan to finish the three remaining large units at Rocky Reach, the turbine repairs, the large units. We will have worked on five of the remaining seven Rock Island Powerhouse 1 units, B1 through 4, and then two of the B5 or B8 units in addition. Right now, B10, B9, and B6 are complete. So to give you a feel for the amount of work this involves, if we've got 31 turbines and generators in our fleet, we expect somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 years of life of those. We, on an average, we'd be doing one per year. Next year, we'll be doing three. In the next 5 years, we'll be doing eight. So it's more than we would normally do. We've got that much work ahead of us. And during the time frame of the business plan, we would actually be starting the Powerhouse 2 modernization effort on top of that. So we've got an awful lot of work there ahead of us. On the innovation front, one of the things that we'll continue on is our digital transformation efforts. When we mention digital transformation, we think of three areas: data, tools, and culture. A lot of the low-hanging fruit has been picked in operating assets like we have on the hydros in terms of machine design capabilities. The industry has improved efficiencies a great deal. There's not a lot of low-hanging fruit left. We believe the next frontier is on the data side, actually using the amount of operational data we gather to become better at predicting when we might expect problems to happen in our units, and to plan and prepare for that in advance so that we don't have the long downtime when something does happen. We are building our own data analytics platform as we speak right now for our own operational data. We plan to leverage that. In addition, the Hydropower Research Institute will give us the ability to leverage even more data, and that will be operational data from other hydro owners. that is up and running. The Institute is aggregating data. By the end of the year, we would expect to have three projects from the Army Corps of Engineers, three projects from Chelan PUD, and three projects from Southern Company to be able to look at operational data. We're moving towards 30% of the hydro capacity being represented in the Institute as far as data goes amongst just amongst those three entities. That's 110 plants, 489 units. So there'll be a lot of operational data that we'll be able to compare our units to. For 2019, the Institute also has a goal of bringing on at least three other hydropower owners in addition to the three I mentioned, as well as one subscriber. That would be somebody that doesn't have data to offer, but they want access to the data and they would purchase to get access to the data for research purposes or for manufacturing purposes or some other purpose that would further the industry. So we've got a lot on our plates there. It's exciting though. And then moving down the line on key outcomes there on the one pager, we will continue to implement our asset management program in generation and transmission. We'll be proactive with changes locally. You've heard about the two dam independent operations. So we'll be certainly bringing that operation into Chelan PUD. So there's a lot of work to do there next year. Begin our outreach efforts on the Chelan area transmission system, hardening that transmission area. Continuing construction of the storage and support facilities at Rock Island and Rocky Reach, which are actually underway at Rock Island as we speak. And continuing improvement of our safety culture through human and organizational performance principles. A couple of other notable efforts. Believe it or not, it's been 3 years since our last WEC audit. And so next year, we'll be actually going through another WEC audit. So we're preparing for that as we speak. The public power benefit projects. We'll continue on with looking at cost estimates for the Rocky Reach Discovery Center, as well as there's potential future developments on hydro research, depending on how far you'd like to go with that. There's, as Steve pointed out, there's a whole world out there on sensor technology, depending on where we want to go with that. And then continuing the turbine generator model that John Yale has been working so hard on. So there's a couple of options there for future and public power benefit funding. I think a couple of things that you don't see in the one-page business plan are important to point out because they have been in the past business plans. One of them was the apprenticeship program. We feel like we've got that on a sustainable path going forward. Another one that was on last year's business plan was succession planning for hydro operators. Again, we feel like we've got that on a sustainable path. So I think it highlights the merits of the business planning process, that there's some things that we have had on there in the past that we've made good progress on, and we feel like they're on a sustainable path going forward. As far as some risks or uncertainties that are looming out there, one of them is the high volume of projects over the next few years. It could make it difficult if we run into problems like we have run into. Could make it difficult to stay on schedule. And we certainly recognize that. I'm hoping we've run into everything we could run into, but that might not be the case. So that's something that's always looming out there. Still watching carefully the trunnion seals on Rocky Reach units 1 through 7. We're in the process of replacing the seals on C1, and hopefully that will work. If it doesn't, we're into potentially much more significant repairs there for all those units. We're always cognizant of the things we can't control in terms of storms and fires. Those certainly bring with them a lot of challenges on the resource side, and as we have to divert resources to respond to those, we take people off of the projects that we have planned for. The new and changing regulatory requirements certainly increase our costs. We're doing what we can to try and hold our own there, but I think we recognize that there are always new requirements coming down the pike. And then cybersecurity, a key focus for us, making sure we have a defense in depth approach to cyber risks. So those are some of the risks we've got our eyes on. With that, I'll open it up to any questions. Okay, I'll turn it over to John.
Well, good afternoon, Commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. The Customer Utilities team, a few folks here in the audience, they consider ourselves pretty nimble, pretty versatile. Of course, we're focused on delivering quality services around electricity, water, wastewater, and of course the associated departments, customer service, engineering, and operations. So we try to do that in a safe, reliable, and affordable manner that's in line with our stakeholders and their expectations. Steve has touched on quite a few of the elements in our one-page business plan. The CIS, that's right at the top of the list. That's going to be a pretty heavy focus. We're less than a year away from the go-live. We've just gone through kind of our homework phase. The team has gone through and looked at all our processes and identified gaps and how that fits into the statement of work and the configuration. So they will be pretty focused on that over the next 6 months, which will then lead into kind of that final testing and training. So, again, appreciate the support because it has pulled other resources away from other things to put the appropriate focus on it. Steve has also talked about the advanced metering system. That's coming right on its heels since the board gave us the green light to develop the RFP, request for proposal. We plan on bringing that to the board over the next within the next 60 days or less. To seek approval to then go out and advertise that. So that will be in effect essentially the beginning of the year as we start looking at who responds, evaluating those technologies, their roadmap, so to speak, on how they would implement the different solutions. There's quite a variety and a ways to do it. So that will be pretty focused on that. Everything goes right with the CIS in late summer, then we will start moving into the AMI or the advanced metering effort. It's interesting, those two projects, it seems like we've been chatting about them for a number of years, and it's here, and we're excited about that because that is really what I consider foundational and transformative as we move the utility forward. The confluence of those technologies will really provide us more data. It will provide us, again, a future capability. Steve has touched on this already, but the foundation of it will require us to take a look at how we do business, how we're organized, what skills we have. We've identified some positions in the budget, primarily around advanced metering, recognizing we will have new roles in order to make these systems work. But then that leads into what other tools and hardware and things down the road we can use all this data and this information we'll get from the advanced meters, again, to look at things like reliability, improve our capability around that. So it's exciting times. We've been working on it for quite a while, but 19 will be a pretty significant lift in with those two efforts. Another one, we continue to, I would say, step forward in our asset management. That's been helpful too. Again, as we look at this data we're acquiring and we look at the systems and how we are looking at our asset management, what is our key focus? Chad and his team have done a lot of work around transformers, our substations, our larger equipment. We've talked about our cable system and looking at ways to seek improvements there and enhance the reliability. So we're just on the edge of moving into those areas. But again, that will be exciting to have that data and, again, to continue to mature our asset management. The 14 substations, that'll be a pretty heavy lift as well. I would anticipate next year continuing to seek property. That was one of the lessons learned we got out of the recent efforts, is to get ahead of the need. So Andy Wendell's just been doing a yeoman's job out there working with our stakeholders, working with the municipalities. I would anticipate potentially three or four more properties being purchased in 19. That really sets the table for looking at some of those alternative procurement methods. If we can bundle some of these together as we continue to work on the substations we have in play already. But I don't want to get too far out. The 14 was really looking at kind of a 10-year plan, but just anticipating that as we grow and as well as we look at our existing substations, we will have some refurbishments to do in that manner. Another piece we'll be focused on is the continued support for the fiber expansion. We're working to use some of our asset management strategies to look at where fiber is going, where we have needs in our system, whether it be strengthening our circuits or our feeders on the overhead system, to even addressing National Electric Safety Code issues. This will be a continued effort for a number of years, but again, this is another effort. We've been working on it for quite some time, and we're putting tools in place from surveying to having more agile, nimble tools to work with, including some contractors to help us out in order to support those programs. So that will be a pretty strong focus in 19. As well as we do have a number of, every year we have municipal county relocations, mandated relocations. You may have heard of the Goodwin Bridge in Kashmir. That will be starting to be worked on as we have to move some of our infrastructure to accommodate that project. That's just one recent example. And we are well poised to partner with finance as part of the strategic planning and long-term revenue rate issues working in that arena as in conjunction with strategic planning. I won't reiterate a lot of the risks. Some of them were similar to what Kirk had mentioned. One risk, you know, we continue to aging workforce. We've had some great hires over the years, but we're also getting to the point where I could see a little more retirements forthcoming. So just how do we address that and accommodate that as well? So with that, I would open up for any questions if you had some.
Okay. And I'm going to vote for a five-minute break. So we have both commission either standing or wanting to. We'll take five. We'll be back. Okay, we'll be back in session. It's 2:30. Yeah, after following a five-minute break or 10-minute, five that grew. Gentlemen, thank you.
I'm Bob Shane. I'm sitting here for Mike Coleman. Today I'm going to be talking about two different business units. One's the fiber and one's the telecom. I'll start off with the fiber. My personal favorite is we're expanding our broadband network under the public power benefit program to 85 to 90% of the premises by 2026 using obviously public power benefit funding. At the same time, we'll be improving our service levels, capacity, and reliability on the existing network. When I talk about capacity, our network right now is gigabit speed capable, which is 1,000 megabits to the home. But that particular version of hardware is already nearing its end of life in this world of technology. So we're upgrading to the next period or next solution, which is a good thing because it also increases the liability because we're getting rid of some of the older systems. We'll also look to deploy advanced services to help attract and maintain businesses on the broadband network, provide basically the ability to generate net positive economic benefits to the county. In other words, we're trying to talk to the service providers and businesses to see what type of advanced services they're looking for on a broadband network to make sure that we're in alignment with that when those services are needed. We'll continue to develop and deploy our network asset program and our network management system processes to enhance our system performance and to reduce our total cost of ownership. I'd like to mention that on our broadband system, it's extremely complicated to provision a service throughout the network because of the number of devices we have to touch. We're currently looking at a way to automate that process from the beginning to the end, which will reduce errors. It will make provisioning much quicker and eventually make it so that we could extend provisioning to third-party services to help us with the provisioning. So those are just options that we have that we're looking at. We are also looking at developing our marketing and branding campaign to help fiber achieve a take rate of 50% or greater. That's particularly important to us. I would mention on the public power benefit, we are past 2,400 new premises to date, of which we have services with about 500 customers in there, so it's growing. Key outcomes, increasing value to our customer owners. We'll continue with the expansion of the broadband in 2019 while we prepare for construction plans for 2020. In other words, we leapfrog a little bit so that we're looking ahead the next year for any construction issues or challenges that we have. We work with Chad Risman and John Stoll's group to make sure that we're in alignment with the construction projects the best that we can to get the most efficiency out of our efforts. We'll continue to develop and implement our asset management program. We're going to probably consolidate. As I mentioned, I have two business units I'm talking about. One is a fiber, one is a telecom. Wherever we can on our asset management, we're trying to combine those for efficiency across the board. We're continuing to develop our disaster recovery plan, which identifies impacting events, including cybersecurity mitigation strategies. That's particularly a challenge for us because as we bring in new technology, that also brings in new opportunities for cybersecurity risks. So we're having to watch that pretty closely. We will continue our joint planning with customer utilities to ensure our public power benefit expansion make ready work and compliance of the National Electric Code are in sync. And overall, we'll continue with our network security improvements, looking for overall performance and reliability gains there. Key variables of the known unknowns. We are forecasting a need for a small, probably about a 1% rate increase starting in 2020 to mitigate inflation. We also identify that we have an overall lack of redundancy on some of our physical and active infrastructure in the network, leading to single points of failures. We're concerned about the overall impact of supply chain market conditions. As we look at technology, we have a single vendor as a solution. We want to make sure that that vendor remains viable in the future, that is being Nokia. We are finding viable service providers to mitigate the risk associated with having one dominant provider. Right now, as you know, we have one that has 96.6% of our customer base. We are concerned about the impact of losing critical employees in such a small and specialized organization, primarily the technical folks. And we're keeping an eye on emerging and competing technologies such as small cell millimeter wireless solutions and overbuilds on our network. Any questions on the fiber one before I move on to the telecom one?
Goal of achieving 50% take, approximately where are we today?
We're around 45%, somewhere in that ballpark. And it's growing.
Bob, one more thing. Our total number of premises passed now are?
I don't have that number exactly. It's over 15,000 total for the entire county. Public power benefits around 2,400.
Yeah, with about a 45% take rate.
Yes.
That's a very high national average.
It's a pretty good national average. Our take rate on the public power benefits lower than we had hoped. We're working with providers to see if we can stimulate that somehow. It's also the timing. We just started the deployment.
Yeah.
And it takes roughly 3 years before any one area tends to stabilize and mature. Our programs are 2 year for any one area, so we're a little bit behind time wise. So I think we have time to catch up. We're hoping we will.
Yeah.
Switch over to the telecom operating plan. We will effectively manage our telecommunication assets through the alignment of the needs of the district with the latest technologies to deliver reliable and feature rich systems at the lowest possible cost. We will provide dependable voice and data communications over the telecom assets within the district while operating the system in a reasonable and efficient manner. We're in the process of replacing our main communication microwave system. It has a tremendous amount of bandwidth, so we're reaching out to our clients to see what other services they might want to put over that system that they couldn't due to the old technology simply did not have the bandwidth. So we're looking to see if we can increase that use. We'll also provide dependable voice and data communications over the telecom assets within the district while operating the system in a reasonable and efficient manner. I guess I just said that. Basically, key outcomes, we're looking to continue and develop the implementation of our asset management program, complete the replacement of our legacy two-way radio system, also called the LMR, Land Mobile Radio System, with a fully up-to-date up-to-date system that's fully supported with highly reliable services. And that basically being the digital mobile radio system, if you'll recall some of the previous presentations we've had. We're going to leverage the increased bandwidth and reliability over the microwave communication systems, which I mentioned earlier. And we will continue with implementation of the advanced features packages on the unified communication system. That is the phone system. There's a lot more flexibility and feature sets that we can put on the phone systems. And so as the need comes up, we try to adapt and make that system meet customers' needs, internal customers. Key variables. Some of our communication sites are leased and subject to third-party actions, which means we're under extended lease, but those leases will be renewed, and at that time there could be an opportunity for maybe a purchase of that property or other situations where we may want to change exactly where we deploy our networks and for our radio systems. And we're looking to watch the changes to the FERC, NERC, and WEC regulatory compliances requiring over our transport system. So I mentioned the microwave system earlier. We are, as core to the systems, we do transport services for the bulk electric group. And so they're under NERC requirements to have certain cyber protections. We want to make sure that our systems are in compliance with that. And we're constantly looking at that from a cybersecurity risk perspective. Any questions?
I think we're good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Hi, Commissioners. This is Greg Carrington, Managing Director of Energy Resources, and wanted to just highlight some of the key things that we have in our business plan. Our overall goal is to optimize the wholesale position and customer energy solutions programs to enhance our revenues and our customers' experience in support of the district's goals. We will continually improve our performance by anticipating, monitoring, and responding to new opportunities and risks. So all that I'm going to do is highlight three of the primary areas that Steve alluded to. Two of them I consider to be at home, and one of them is kind of the Western power market as a whole. So the first one at home is independent operations. As Steve mentioned to you, you know, we have a system right now that is in place at Grant. It includes our accounting system, our river operation systems, and then after the fact, accounting. And we're going to replace what I consider to be an old, outdated system. And it's kind of like in a spaghetti ball of all these wires going in there. So we're going to sever those ties and hook them up to our own system. But what we're going to do when we do that is we have an eye towards efficiency improvements. And we have an eye towards what the market will be in the future. For example, a lot of the computer systems that are at Central right now work on an hourly time step. In order for us to participate in EIM, we're going to convert that from an hourly time step to a five-minute time step, which is required on the EIM. As a result of doing this, we expect there's going to be some changes that will be occurring. One, we're going to see much greater visibility of the river operations. Our operators will see the river better. Everybody will be able to participate in that activity, and we'll have improved operations over time. Second thing that will be occurring as a result of that is we're going to have improved efficiency at our units. Right now, it gets dispatched by Central. Sometimes it's at the most efficient point, and sometimes it's not. We're not going to let that happen in the future. We're going to make sure that as we dispatch our units, they're going to be dispatched in the most efficient way. And then finally, I have a stretch goal of rebuilding the things that coordination did today, which is coordinating with the others on the river, like the Corps of Engineers, Bureau of Reclamation, Douglas and Grant. There's certain aspects of coordination that I think should continue. So we have the stretch goal of continuing those things into the future. So that was the first thing. The second thing is at home again, and it's called the Energy Solutions. Right now, we're in this kind of this weird time in our customers' experience regarding energy products. There's a lot of new technologies coming online. There's pump storage, you know, like heat pumps that are available. There's smart thermostats. And the trend in the, you know, the utility industry is to stay at the forefront of that so that you become the best resource for the customers. And that's exactly what we plan on doing through Andrew's group. So as a result of that, We want to become partners with our customers. We want to become their trusted resource. We want to include electrification in the services that we provide. Electrification would be converting anything that uses fossil fuels today into electric. An example would be electric vehicles. It could be some of the gas heaters that are out there, and we expect to help them as they go through that conversion as well. And then finally, we're going to partner with our internal customers to make this all happen. So John Stoll's group is going to be getting these requests that come in, and then we'll have the experts, like, you know, we'll have, Andrew and his team that will be available at any time when people have questions about that. And then so finally, the last thing I wanted to highlight is the Westwide new markets. And we could probably talk about 3 hours about what's going to be happening on that. But as you know, the markets are moving away from traditional bilateral markets. They're moving into a more organized examples. CalISO EIM as example. Steve was talking about the extended day ahead market. So as you go from EIM at 4% of our trades that we occur on a daily basis to 40%, that could have a very significant impact on us. So, you know, the result of that, we plan on monitoring and responding to new markets. We are in California participating in the markets and the meetings that are occurring there more often than I care to admit. We plan on offering new products and services so that as you see more renewables and people responding to carbon regulations, there's going to be new products. And I think hydropower and our projects as a whole provide a services that nobody else can provide. And so finally, our last thing that we plan on doing is protecting and enhancing the role of hydropower in the West. And so with those three key items, we anticipate we're going to stay on top of the market, and we'll be back to you throughout the year to report changes that are occurring and ways that we need to respond. So any questions about that?
Steve.
So, Greg, as you talk about independence, and but you did talk about still some coordination efforts going on.
Yeah.
Have those been agreed upon, or is that yet to...
Yeah, there are certain things that we're working on. I was with Bonneville Power last week, and one of the first things we want to do is have a robust data sharing agreement. So we're in the process of developing a data sharing agreement. We've listed all of the points that we want to share, and it's a matter of basically putting that down on paper at this point. Other examples would be coordination for the Columbia River Treaty. Other examples would be the Hanford Reach Agreement. All of those, we are beginning to draft kind of the way that we would coordinate into the future. We have about a year and a half to basically get those done, and that's what we're working toward. The data sharing, we're hoping to get done by the end of the year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Felicity Saberhagen, Business Advisor, and I'm here on behalf of District Services. Over the next 5 years, the 17 functions in District Services will continue to make a difference by supporting our lines of business as they pursue their efforts to increase distribution reliability and increase hydro capability for our customer owners. We contribute by providing a combination of both internal and external services to facilitate internal work processes, as well as provide high-quality recreational experiences and protect natural resources on behalf of our customer owners. District Services will lead a number of key efforts to this end over this next five-year window. The first example is executing our long-term facilities plan. The overall objective is to implement the highest value solution. This includes evaluating long-term costs, productivity increases, and streamlining of operational logistics. Another example is relicensing our Rock Island Hydro facility. Our license expires in 2018. This presents us with an opportunity to work with the Federal Energy Regulatory Committee to seek credit for work that has been or will be completed prior to entering into our new license term. Being able to complete this work early and get credit in our next license allows our customer owners the opportunity to receive benefits up to 10 years sooner, benefiting us both in the short and long term. Also of high priority is communicating with our customer owners. In 2016, we dedicated staff to ensure we connect with our low-income and Hispanic Latino populations so their perspectives are included in our decision-making processes. During this five-year cycle, we will perform survival studies at both Rock Island and Rocky Reach. We're required by our Habitat Conservation Plans, or HCPs, to perform these every 10 years. Measuring project survival allows us to show that our environmental enhancements are meeting the objectives of our HCPs. Key variables over the next 5 years are similar to what we've had in years past. We know that the political landscape is constantly changing, as you heard from Greg, and so we actively engage our external affairs group in key areas. We do not know exactly what the outcomes are going to be in these instances, but we do know that new issues will emerge. So we have to be able to adapt to support our changing operational needs. We also evaluate and design our processes so there's enough flexibility to meet dynamic business requirements, yet still satisfy our internal controls. Last of all, I just wanted to thank you all for your support today. It's especially great that given in district services, you guys have always been very helpful and very kind to us, and I appreciate that. Are there any questions I can answer today? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Lorna Klemanski, Managing Director of Human Resources and Safety. For the next 5 years, HR and safety will be making a difference by making safety a top priority within the district and by supporting business units in their pursuit of both safety and operational excellence. We will build knowledge about safety regulations and best practices within the safety team and throughout the district. We will also continue to ensure the district has the diverse talent needed to continue producing the best for the most for the longest for our customer owners. We hire amazing, talented people, and we will help them develop and enhance their capabilities so they have the leadership skills, the technical and data skills, and especially the adaptability and creativity to meet our future challenges. Over the planning period, we will work to align our talent strategies to be even more successful at attracting, developing, motivating, and retaining our people assets. Key variables and risks for the next 5 years remain much the same as identified in previous years. We know retirements and other turnover will continue to drain institutional knowledge, while at the same time also providing opportunities to bring in new skills and perspectives. We just don't know exactly when and where the losses will occur. We know we can expect increasing competition for talent, especially for technical skills, yet we don't know how that will affect market trends, including wages, our ability to hire qualified workers, generational differences, and whether there will be more transients in the workforce. As I've noted already, safety will be my business unit's highest district-supported priority. Key outcomes we'll be working toward include driving adoption of a learning culture around human performance improvement and operational excellence throughout the district. We will also be evaluating recommendations flowing from safety incident investigations and developing plans to respond on a prioritized basis. And we'll be reviewing our energy isolation programs and procedures, determining whether, when, and what type of changes the district might want to undertake. Other district-supported priorities include addressing critical gaps and misalignments in our talent strategies, influencing legislators and regulators on employment concerns, and maintaining a good working relationship with the IBEW to ensure financial sustainability with our collective bargaining agreements and reasonableness in our work rules. Our business unit goals include streaming HR and safety processes to more effectively and more efficiently meet the needs of other business units, continuously reviewing our programs and implementing changes as needed to keep up with changing compliance mandates and other business needs, conducting outreach to enhance our diversity profile, enhancing leadership and supervisory skills to improve overall performance, and evaluating our total rewards offerings for regulatory compliance to motivate employees and to attract highly sought after candidates. Thank you for the interest you have shown in supporting our efforts this year and in future years. And I am also happy to answer any questions, but also even more delighted not to.
Let's see. Let me think.
You keep thinking. We'll talk later.
All
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer. And finance and risk will make a difference by being leaders in our prudent financial and risk disciplines, optimizing our debt and investment portfolios, and advancing utilization of data analytics. Our success will be reflected as we maintain our bond ratings among the highest of any utility in the country, our debt ratio below 35%, and the confidence of our customer owners through our clean audit opinions. Our key projects include the strategic planning process, supporting along with customer utilities, the retail revenue planning. Our role is through forecasting and cost of service calculations, and also a variety of process improvements to help us achieve more through efficient processes. For IT, we will make a difference by helping everyone achieve more through the use of information and technology. This includes our core duties of being relentless in protecting against cybersecurity risks, providing a highly available and resilient computing environment, and partnering with other business units to provide technical tools and processes to help them achieve their goals and achieve them faster through the use of technology. Our key projects include upgrading the CIS, customer information system, as you've heard, the common theme, getting our data structure in good shape, and advancing our mobile technology program. Both of the secondary work will be at a modest pace initially, with more progress being accomplished after we complete the CIS project. So the Finance, Risk, and IT business unit has an ambitious five-year plan. And all of it supports our focus of keeping the district financially healthy and strong and keeping our rates stable and affordable for our customer owners. And now I'd like to transition it over to Eric.
Commissioners, I feel like this is the time of year when I always get to say my primary job is to help all of those people do all those things they just told you about. That's the first function that my team has, is to provide the legal support directly necessary to see that those folks get all of that important work done. Secondarily, we do proactively manage the district's risk and compliance obligations. We do that, I'm going to say, in the upcoming years in primarily three ways. First, we advance further the governance risk and compliance initiative that we started last year. We continue to conduct our internal audit and compliance reviews and provide support through either corrective measures or internal controls appropriate to ensure that ongoing compliance. And third, we help review and give advice about implementing new statutory, legal, and regulatory compliance obligations here at the district. Questions?
Before we shift back to Steve, I have to ask Kelly a question. She didn't give us the opportunity to ask questions.
That was the quick shift. I was waiting for questions too.
You know, what would you do in this time period if you got a management letter from an auditor?
Depends upon what it said.
First, I would do everything in my power to ensure that that didn't happen and that we could that we could support our case for that not being a valid management letter.
And how long has it been since we got one?
It's been a really long time.
That's a good feeling.
It is great. But should there be the case that there was one, because sometimes those things do happen, we would definitely respond and adapt to what's needed to ensure that we maintain those strong internal controls and get right back on track.
Okay. So I hate to have to do this, but I have to correct that. It hasn't been that long since we've received a management letter. It's been about two or three years. It's been a very, very long time since we've received any sort of finding or unclean audit. Management letter does not equate to an unclean or problematic audit.
And Eric and I are probably going to have to take this outside.
So,
because we're talking about two different auditors.
But. Oh, that could be. That could be. I'm thinking of the state auditor who actually wrapped up and left the district last Friday. Oh.
So we're going to let them handle that outside.
My money's on Kelly.
Mine too.
So just to wrap this up, I'd say, first of all, we feel good that the strategic plan is working, that the best value for the most people for the longest time provides really clear direction about making sure that we're investing to create long-term value here, that we don't have short-term financial difficulties that would cause us to curtail the fundamental philosophy behind best for the most for the longest. We believe we're achieving our financial goals, even though we see borrowing in our headlights. We always knew that that was a possibility, and in fact, most utilities do borrow. It's quite unusual to revenue finance your entire capital program. We do have a really extensive workload associated with the asset and people investments that we have coming up. If I was going to try to summarize what is it that's new here, because along the way you heard us say, well, we've talked about before or this or that. So what is it that's new here? I'd really focus on the fact that we do see our financials being in really good shape, whereas we think we have a lot more work to do with respect to our hydro capability and distribution system reliability. And the biggest change in this five-year business plan from the last one is that focus on how do we try to get our hydro system capability and distribution system reliability into a better place, and do that in a fashion in which we're confident we're doing it safely, that we're achieving operational excellence, we're achieving quality, and that we're finding ways at the same time to be able to hopefully increase the pace. Although I'd say increase the pace is the last of those objectives. So we want to do it safely with operational excellence and with quality as the priority. So that's where we're really trying to go. Next steps, we look for board feedback on these draft plans. We appreciate that if you can get to us even in advance of the next board meeting so we can begin to take that into account. Remember, we're in a forced march here towards adoption of a budget by the first board meeting in December with a couple of hearings to come focusing on 2019 activities. You're going to be hearing more about that in the course of the next couple of meetings. I know that was a long presentation, and we don't like to do that, but this is the one time of year where we're really translating your direction into strategy for the next year. So we do try to make sure that we've done a good overview of the things that we think are important. With that, turn it back over to you.
Okay. Any comments, questions, commissioners? Okay, we'll move on to the consent agenda. And what are your thoughts regarding it, please?
Move approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to accept the consent agenda as presented. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion as presented signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. And we are at item 10.
So items 10 through 14 are all items that we presented to the board in the past, but we felt that it was important to bring them forward as individual items just in case there might be any public comment or any questions from the board. So we'll start with item 10, a resolution authorizing the general manager to purchase a 1.63-acre parcel of land located adjacent to Highway 97A in the city of Antioch from R&S Rentals, LLC. Andy is here. Great. So we won't be going through the presentation Andy made at the last board meeting, but available if there are any questions.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Just want to, before we get started on the resolution, I want to draw your attention back 2 weeks ago, September 17th. Chad Brisman and I brought a presentation forward. We were requesting no action at that point in time, but referencing the work that we've done with the city of Iniat through the planning process identify the need for infrastructure that would support their future growth and expansion of their riverfront and the city of Iniat. So fast forwarding today, we're asking the board to approve a resolution that authorizes the general manager to purchase the 1.63-acre parcel of land located just off of Highway 97. And the seller is R&S Rental, LLC. So some factual background, of course, the Chelan PUD has the legal authority through state law to purchase properties to support the delivery of electric services. This is doing that. We will be planning to build a 28 MVA substation on this particular property, which is the standard substation. That was identified through that collaborative planning process with the city of Inyat. Staff was able to negotiate a selling price of $129,900. Staff recommends that district approve the purchase of this land, and we would intend on completing this property acquisition by the end of 2018. So with that, I would be able to answer any additional questions that you have.
Commissioners, hearing none, what I would propose this to do is to take this as a single item, as a means of communication with the city of Inyat, that we value them and their relationship with us, and take this under consideration in the form of a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move we authorize the general manager to purchase a 1.63-acre parcel of land located adjacent to Highway 97A in the city of Inyat from RNS Rentals, LLC.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded to accept Resolution 10 as presented. Any discussion or further discussion?
I just have a comment.
Sure.
I spoke about this on the radio last week, and I have invited comment, and I haven't heard not back from one person, so perfect. I have no concerns.
Okay. Those in favor of the motion as presented signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. Motion is carried. Andy,
thank you
very much.
Thank you, Chad.
And everyone else for the work, and this will be good.
Okay.
That one went smoothly.
I think Steve mentioned 14, so one's down, 13.
Good perspective. 11, please.
A resolution authorizing the general manager to enter into a lease agreement with Port of Chelan County for the lease of a portion of Port Industrial Building Number 5, IB Number 5, located in Wenatchee, Washington. Again, this was presented at the last board meeting. Dan Frazier is here to answer any questions that you may have.
That's what I'm here for. It's, again, a presentation from last week. Really, nothing's changed. I think at the time there was one outstanding issue. That's been resolved. The port has signed this agreement, and we're ready to move forward. Any questions?
Good work.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
12, please.
A resolution approving a request for qualification RFQ number 18-10 for Rock Island Dam Powerhouse number 2, generating unit rehabilitation project, and authorizing the general manager of the district to publish notice inviting sealed proposals for said project. John Sagerser is here, and you saw him a couple of weeks ago as well.
Yep. Good afternoon, commissioners. As you recall, 2 weeks ago we were here informing you of our intent to go to the state project review committee to ask their approval to use the design build procurement method for the Rock Island Powerhouse 2 unit rehabilitation project. Happy to say that we received their support unanimously. So we've been approved through the state PRC. We expect written notification from them shortly. So today we are asking your authorization to advertise the request for proposal for that project. Again, the request for qualification is the first step of the design build process, where we'll use it to shortlist two contractors based on their qualifications. We'll issue a request for proposal to those two qualified contractors, who will then engage in a competitive design process. We'll evaluate those designs and decide which one is best for the district, and then we'll negotiate a contract with contractor who had the best design, which will occur sometime in second quarter of 2019. Questions?
Yes, Mr. Smith.
Just a comment. In my eyes, this is a really important resolution because it signifies a shift in how we propose to do business and hopefully to improve the outcomes that we get when we are doing business. And so we haven't been there before. It's new territory, but I've got all the confidence in the world, and people like you, John, and I see Kirk sitting with a smile back there behind you, that that you guys are going to watch this, work this process to its maximum to provide the the best for the most for the longest. And I'm excited about this one.
Thank you. We're excited too. Thank you for your support.
Thank you.
We're good, John. Appreciate it.
I'm going to cover 13 and 14 together here. Again, item that came forward to the board at the last meeting. 13, a resolution rescinding and replacing resolution number 17-14199 and adopting new telecommunication rates for wholesale telecommunication services by service providers on the district's broadband system. And 14, a resolution to revise the district's telecommunication service installation policy. Bob Shane.
Thank you. I would like to add that since that presentation that Mike presented back on the 17th, we had some questions circle back from the Utility Services Policy Committee that were initially raised in our first review. We went ahead and addressed those questions, and basically the essence of those, the nature of those questions had to do with the quality and the good communications plan with both internal staff and customer owners, and understanding what the customer installation policy was trying to provide the customer. So it was a good collaborative conversation with the internal folks to make sure that we had a good communication plan. We have action plans in place to mitigate confusion in the future. Is there any questions or feedback for me?
I think we're good.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioners, we have before us resolutions 11, 12, 13, and 14. Share with me your direction.
I would move to approve resolutions 11, 12, 13, and 14 as stated.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept resolutions 11, 12, 13, and 14 as presented. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor of 11, 12, 13, and 14 as presented signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. All right. Thank you very much. Item 15, manager items.
Yeah, I want to invite Kim Craig to come up and talk a little bit about Public Power Week.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Kimberly Craig in Communications, and I'm very excited to say that Chelan PUD is helping kick off Public Power Week celebrations. We're doing that with a thank you to our customer owners on Wednesday and Friday with pumpkin donuts and cider, in case you happen to be either by the Leavenworth office in the afternoon or in Chelan and Wenatchee on Friday mid-morning. We're also having, this year, we are really focused on all the benefits of hydropower. Our hydropower system, as we have heard, is an amazing focus of what we're investing in here for the benefit of our customer owners, and we're going to celebrate that on Saturday at Pybus Market, 10 to 1. We have games, we have crafts, we have gyotaku, the Japanese fish printing, which is popular with kids of all ages, and a line truck, safety information, and all the kinds of things that help people understand that hydropower is, well, I have to say it, just damn cool. And so the other thing that we're grateful for is we're also helping folks show their hydropower savvy and giving them an incentive to do that by offering a drawing for 2 Seahawk tickets for Monday Night Football game on December 10th. We have an interesting contest on social media where take a picture of yourself at a PUD facility, Parker Dam, and tag us, and you go in the drawing. But we're also salting the mine a bit because we're giving folks more entries if they come to Pybus and fill out a short little questionnaire that shows their hydropower savvy. We'll be using digital technology to help us qualify, make sure the folks are PUD customers, and to be doing the drawing by October next week, October 12th. So we'll also have a chance to promote that winner and the excitement that we expect to go with that on social media. So I look forward to having all of you there. I heard that Commissioner Arsenault is going to join me on the radio tomorrow to help extend that invitation, and I'm happy to answer any questions that I can.
I think that Saturday at Pybus coincides with the grand opening of their expansion.
It does, and we're excited about that. There's also a fun run there, so there's going to be a great opportunity perhaps to talk to a lot of folks who either aren't aware of our hydro projects and the benefits for the county, or could use just a little reminder. Thank you.
Kim, go ahead, please. The October 3rd in Leavenworth, what time is that?
At 1 o'clock when the office opens, and then as long as the donuts last. But we've had a good supply. So.
Is that going to be hot spice cider?
You know, we've tried hot spice cider, and people prefer cold. Okay. So that's what we're having.
Put it in the microwave, Ned.
I was just going to comment. Last year, it was just interesting, and I appreciate all the staff who turned out to help promote. What I thought was most fascinating was the line truck with the linemen, and the kids just clustered. It was just like, you know, a fly out on the river. Boy, the minnows came up, and our linemen were great with them and gracious, and it was just fun to watch.
It is, and more than one parent I saw climb into the cab as well and sit in front of that that wheel. So thank you very much. I hope to see you all there.
Thank you very much.
Next up, I want to invite Suzanne Hartman and Kirk Hudson. So this is an example of innovation. We talk about innovation as part of our vision, and we've got something going on here that's, I think, a pretty cool new tool we're going to have.
Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission, and Suzanne Hartman.
Manager of Communications.
So over the next couple of weeks, we'll be flying the lines, which is our transmission lines, which is not uncommon. What's unique in this particular case is using LIDAR technology, light and range detection technology. And we've done that in the past on the transmission system. We've flown our transmission system using that technology. What it does is provide us with distance to lines and things that are in proximity to the lines. So whether it's the lines and the distance from the line to the ground, or whether it's the lines and the distance from lines to trees. So we've done that in the past. What's unique this time is the flights will have a lot more sensors. Not only will we have imagery from the flights and the distances from the flights, we'll also be looking at what they call corona, which is emissions from the lines that ionize the air around the lines. And so if there's an anomaly in the line, you will see a difference there. And we'll also be flying with infrared sensors, which detect heat. And so you can see differences in heat. If, for instance, if you fly across a insulator, that insulator, if it's doing its job, will have a certain heat characteristic to it. And so you can see differences between that insulator and the one next to it on the same structure that you can't pick up with the human eye as you're flying across these lines. So we're excited about deploying some new technology. One of the things we're going to be doing up in the Plain and Lake Wenatchee area is comparing this to data that we obtained 6 to 8 years ago. Particularly on the vegetation management side. So we'll give the people that are helping us some measurements, and we'll say, look at the data we collected that long ago, look for trees, and then also use the new data that we collected and see what the difference is. So we're playing around with this, looking at opportunities to actually improve our understanding and risks associated with our vegetation management program. Wow.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Is that all our technology?
It's not ours. We contract that all out.
Oh, it is. And yeah. So is this a county helicopter? Every bit of it's contracted out.
Yep.
Wow.
And as you can imagine. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. Do we employ any drones for, you know, with sensors and for photography and so forth? Not yet.
So we've been looking at that, and we've been evaluating that. I'm not sure if we've actually done that yet.
We have a pilot program for drones, and we've tested a few uses of it, and would anticipate we'll expand that through time.
I was at a Lakeshland Ski Club work party this weekend, and there's a kid from Antioch, Josh Peterson, who's a senior, and he owns his own drone, and he's actually registered with the FAA, and he was flying the drone over the work party and doing photos, and he actually showed me how it operates, and it's pretty cool.
The technology is advancing just an amazing velocity to where you can actually contain these things in a helicopter and get close to where you can contain all these sensors in an unmanned aircraft as well.
Yeah, and all these sensors that, you know, if it gets even close to a power line or anything, it has enough sensors that it acts right off. I mean, it's cool.
The other thing we're going to try new on this one is the distribution area up around the Plain Lake Wenatchee. So we're going to do the transmission that we already have data for a comparison, but also try it on the distribution, three lines up on the distribution system up in that area as well.
That could be really big going forward for all of our distribution.
Yep.
Could be it.
Yeah.
And it's also important because, you know, we've been watching in California the exposure to wildfire risk for utilities. Mm-hmm. And so we've been looking for how can we try to mitigate that risk. And the information is going to be a lot more valuable than it would have been a few years ago to understand.
Especially that corona effect, you know.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Well, even for the fire responders, it would be good information, too, as they're working those fire lines. But as you can imagine, having a low-flying helicopter along power lines might draw some attention or
just make sure it's not black.
Question. Yeah. No black helicopters. So we've been getting information out. Kim's sent out a media advisory, and I'm sure Commissioner Arsenault will mention it tomorrow as well to let people know why those helicopters are out there. And we've also let the sheriff and police departments and everyone know so that there's no question about why those helicopters are flying so low. And part of why it's going to be over the month of October is because the weather. You never can depend on the weather cooperating when you want to fly. So we've put a time frame of October to allow us to get it all finished.
Kirk, the LIDAR is really interesting technology. And this may sound like a weird question, but is there ever any concern with the ground movement underneath those towers? And the LIDAR over time, you're going to create a base of what's happening with movements in ground as well. Well, is that accurate, or is that ever a concern?
So
I know we do with vegetation, but it seems like ground movement in some areas might be of concern.
And we will be able to pick that up depending on how frequently you fly the lines. The way the technology works is you fly over the lines with all these sensors, and it shoots a light pulse down. Say this is the transmission line, shoots a light pulse down, and then measures the time it takes for that light pulse to come back. And so it calculates the distance. So doing it not only vertically, but it's doing it at multiple angles and correcting for the angles. So when you think about it, if the ground changes, whether it's movement or somebody changes something on the ground, piles up a pile of dirt, you're going to actually see that the next time you fly it. So might not necessarily pick up on that if you're just flying it with a human eye looking at things down because you're focused on the lines and you're focused on trees, but you may not pick up things like that the technology will show a difference.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That's pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've got one other one, and I just, it's not directly related to us, but it's because you participated in APPA and other national forums. I just want to make sure you're aware of it. There's been a huge issue in the Southeast the last couple of weeks. There's a nuclear plant being built there called Vogtle, and the owners of that plant are a combination of investor-owned utilities, co-ops, and municipals, led by Georgia Power, a Southern Company subsidiary, but MEAG, Municipal Electric Authority of Georgia, and Oglethorpe Power have got significant shares. So they've reached a crisis point. The plant, you may recall that the plant in South Carolina was canceled last year. That created a lot of problems for public power entities in South Carolina. The estimated cost to complete the Vogtle project, thought they had come into a conclusion last December and came to an agreement to move forward, and they've added another $1.4 billion to it in the last 2 months here. That set off a chain of events where some of the participants are saying, I'm not so sure I want to be a part of this anymore. And one of them, Jacksonville Electric, filed suit against MEAG, who's there. They were under a power purchase agreement with. MEAG Utilities are APPA members. Jacksonville Electric are APPA members. MEAG is an LPPC member, as is Jacksonville Electric, so it's created some consternation. But particularly around a filing that Jacksonville made at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission saying that the power purchase agreement that they had signed should be subject to FERC jurisdiction. And up until now, power purchase agreements between public power entities have not been subject to FERC jurisdiction. So what that has done is drawn all of the public power entities around the country into this, including us. There's a fair amount of discussion going on at the trade associations right now. Filings are due on October 17th. I would anticipate that in one fashion or another that we will be participating in opposing the Jacksonville Electric motion. I would based on what I have seen in the last week, that there will be many, many public power entities and many trade associations that will be opposing Jacksonville on this as well. So unfortunately, we have a little dispute going on within the public power family, but it's over an issue that is extremely important to public power. And so I just would want you to be aware of that as you're engaged with your many activities around the national trade associations in particular.
Commissioner Adams?
I've got one.
Please.
Within the last couple of weeks, I've been asked if I would be willing to go through the chairs of the Policymakers Council, which is an arm of American Public Power Association. It would be the national policymakers, and indicated that I would be willing to do that. So that would ultimately culminate in me being the national chair of that organization.
Is that a board member or part of?
I'm already a board member.
General Manager Steve Wright is
on the board of directors.
Board of directors. This is the
policymakers. The chair of that serves a 1 year stint on the board of directors of American Public Power. So the year in which that person is chair, they would be part of the board of directors.
Randy, when does this line up with the WAPUTA? Or does it?
I'll be president next year of WAPUTA from May through the following May, and I would just be starting next year.
Okay.
Going through the chair.
Yeah. All right. My feeling? Knock yourself out, man. Go get it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Any others? Or could anybody else trump that one? Okay, Commissioner Travel. Lisa.
Hello, Lisa Sanders, admin in finance. And Kim told me that employees cannot win the Seahawks tickets.
Correct.
And I was thinking about why she would specifically tell me, but I won the Seahawks or the Mariners tickets for my famous haiku, so it makes sense now. So we don't have much travel left for the rest of the year. I had a couple questions for Commissioner Smith.
I will be going to the Budget Committee meeting, and that Wednesday night that you have the reservation, I will use.
You will?
Yep.
Okay. I registered you today. What about APPA policymakers?
That's just a phone call. That was when I put it on the calendar, it came up wrong. So that's just a half-hour phone call from here.
Oh, so you are not traveling?
Nope, not traveling.
The October 4th through 10?
Right, not traveling.
Really?
Yep.
Good to know. I have Commissioner Congdon. You weren't sure if you were attending WAPUTA November meeting?
Yeah, I still don't know about November or December. I'll let you know as soon as I know more.
Okay. Anyone else?
As far as
everyone's
I know.
Good?
Going to be there.
I will be there.
Okay. And for the Waputa Annual Conference, just today I got information for the hotel block. So Commissioner Arsenault is not attending?
No.
Still? Okay. So shall I hold four rooms with everyone else?
For December.
Mm-hmm. Good.
You know, I really don't think I'll be able to attend that. Don't book me a room.
Okay.
At this time. Thank you.
Okay. That's all I have. Is there anything I can do for you?
Thanks.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. You bet. I'll follow up on delegation of action items from previous.
There are two from the meeting I didn't attend, so hopefully I'll get this right. Mike Coleman is going to gather some information on what service providers are doing to help low-income customers. That's in process, and it'll be reported at a future meeting. And Aline Underwood will report on what costs us to achieve noted impact, again in process, and will be reported at a future meeting.
What was the what was the second one, Steve?
I think it might have come from you. That's what I heard, at least.
Yeah.
That we're reporting on what it costs us to achieve note and impact under the Habitat Conservation Plan. Is that
fit pretty broad, isn't it? That's a broad ask. Let me get back to you on that, because okay. That's too broad.
Okay, yeah. That'd be great, actually.
Yeah. No, that's,
appreciate that.
We'll work on that.
Delegation of action items for today?
We did not capture any for today, so did we miss anything?
Other than Eric and Kelly deciding when that last management right. letter came.
She's already threatened me.
I can imagine. When the lady plays hockey.
I'm okay with it.
Hockey, I think I would. Bit of caution there. Additional public comment? Nick Martini? About 5 minutes, Nick, please.
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks.
So the last time I spoke with you was a few months ago, and at the end of it, Commissioner Bowles asked me
Would you to, please state your name?
Oh, sorry, for the record.
Yes, please.
Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Nick Martini. I'm at 324 South Chelan. And so after the last time I spoke with you, Commissioner Bowles asked me to, you know, allow the process to work its way through to a solution, and I did that, but it's kind of put me in a bad position, and so I was coming here today to ask you if you could help me with this situation that I'm in. So basically, I need to build a structure to house the machines that I'm going to be using, and in talking with a lot of different sources, including sound engineers, other people who have done this in the past, I think what would be best for the location that I'm at is to excavate a basement, put in a foundation, build a shed on top of that. And what that would do is create 5 of the 6 walls where the machines are will be concrete and underground, and then just have like a floor to try to mitigate the noise that would be created. The problem with that is because of the timing of the decision that the Chelan PUD will be making, it will be difficult for me to be able to tell, okay, this is the size of the transformer, this is the positioning of everything, in order to figure out, okay, this is where I need to dig the basement that will be for this shed. So what I was hoping was that I could get some help in terms of figuring out what it will look like, what the space requirements will be for my energy ask, so that I could do that planning now and get that excavation taken care of before the winter kicks in and I can't dig that and I can't get the foundation in. And it's especially problematic because the city of Wenatchee has a temporary resolution that has the South Wenatchee Business District as zoned for cryptocurrency mining. That expires in February of 2019. And theoretically, and what they've mentioned before is, look, if you have this mine up and running before that date, before the expiration, you're grandfathered in. If you don't, then we could change the zoning and make it so that the South Wenatchee Business District isn't zoned for cryptocurrency mining. So while I'm trying to, you know, waiting for Chelan PUD to, you know, get to the point where I can actually use it, a new organization will come in and pull the rug out from underneath me, and then I won't be able to do this project. So I guess what I was asking, I'm not asking for the energy, I'm not asking for lifting of the moratorium. I guess what I'm asking is help from staff to figure out what the sizing requirements will be for the transformer, the equipment, so that I can get my building permit finished and I can get this all set up so that once the moratorium is lifted, it's not, oh, well, your shed's too big and we can't accommodate you now. So that's all I wanted to bring up. It is kind of a pressing issue where, you know, I think I have about 2 to 3 weeks to kind of get this figured out. And I was hoping that I could get some accommodation on that. So that's all I have.
Okay. Any comments or questions?
Can I ask a quick question? You've been following us pretty closely, you know, and so presumably you've seen the proposals we have with respect to where we're going with the cryptocurrency rate.
Yeah.
Are you comfortable that you're going to be able to operate with that cryptocurrency rate? Because on our behalf, if we entered into a bunch of work and then it turns out the rate's not going to work, then it's a waste of our time.
Yeah.
I guess the way I put it.
So you know, I've talked to you several times, and so I think I've mentioned this. There's a bunch of other groups that I've spoken with, too. You know, part of this is what I'm looking at is not, it's not driven solely by making a profit off of the cryptocurrency mining. It is gaining understanding of the process of cryptocurrency mining that I'm looking at it as more of how can I figure out or what pressure points or pain points are there in this process, and thinking more towards building a business or consulting to help people in the future, or trying to address those aspects of cryptocurrency mining that are problematic. So I intend to go forward with this. I mean, if it isn't profitable, you know, just from selling the cryptocurrency, I am still planning on going forward with it. So, you know, it's 100% for me if I can get it working. So there, the pricing isn't going to, I mean, I'd like it to be lower, and I'd like to make a profit off of that. But for me, it's more of the educational aspect, and that's not going to change.
Okay.
So can I just say I wasn't aware of the situation that Mr. Martini's raising with you until an email earlier today. So we will have to work with staff to see what we can do that wouldn't require the board somehow modifying its moratorium. There might be something there. There might not be. But
and I think we can take that as an action item.
We'll take it as an action item and then make sure the communication happens with you.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Unless anybody has any other questions.
I think we're good.
Thank you.
Thank you. I was unaware that there was an Oakland Athletic by the name of Nick Martini until the other night. There we go. So what do I know? Thank you, Nick. Number 21, matters of general business as necessary to come before the commission. Hearing none, we will move from here after a short break into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is likely to become a party, and or legal risk is authorized by RCW 42.30.110I, to consider the selection of site, acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase, when public knowledge regarding such acquisition. Boy, I lost the line. Acquisition of real estate or purchase when the public knowledge such consideration of likelihood of increased price as authorized by RCW 42.30.1101B and to consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease, when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause the likelihood of a decreased price, as authorized by RCW 42.30.1101C. And we were about what length of time?
I'm going to say 75 minutes.
75 minutes. So we are at, let's start at 3:45. With the goal of being done by...
I have a question for Eric. Go ahead.
When will we be done?
Five.
Is it necessary to read the entire word?
It is word actually. For word it is actually necessary to read it. Yes. Although we can probably shorten it some with respect to the reference to the RCWs, so that we don't have to read through the specific citations, because that is not necessary.
Okay.
Starting at 4:45. 3:45. I'm sorry.
Little guy's got a horn that comes out.
Good afternoon. It's 4:55, and the Chelan County Board of Directors is coming out of executive session where no decisions were made and no votes were taken. Being that there's no other business to come before the commission, we stand adjourned.
All right.